Freedom Fiends, the show that helps you laugh while Western civilization collapses around us. Randy England from Missouri joins us on the line. Hey, Randy.
Hello. Hey, did we just knock Michael Dean off the air there? I thought I heard soothing tones.
Yeah, we knocked him right off because he's busy building a rocket ship, a windowless rocket ship, to reach the Alpha Centauri region. Some of our favorite alien fans are out there listening in space. But I wanted to talk with you tonight, since you're a former prosecutor and one of those lawyer types, you might have some opinions about a friend of mine who's in jail for not getting a license.
What kind of a license?
Well, he didn't get a driver's license. You see, he already has one, but he didn't change it over to the New Hampshire one. And this is ridiculous to me. So he's got a driver's license already. He can drive. That's not the issue. The state isn't like, oh, you're a horrible driver. Get off the road. They're just saying, you have moved now from one piece of the earth to another piece of the earth. And see, that requires that you get a new piece of plastic for driving. And Daryl, this hero of mine, Daryl W. Perry, who hosts Free Talk Live and Peace, Love, Liberty Radio, and a few other terrific news programs at fpp.cc, he is so heroic. He stood up to this, challenged it in court, was found guilty, and is currently sitting in jail for not getting a new piece of plastic from the state of New Hampshire.
How long is he in for?
3 days.
Well,
that is the punishment.
He shouldn't be in jail at all.
Now, this is one of those things called victimless crimes, where people who have created no harm, no damages to anyone, are being put into jail cells. And this is really troubling to me because, you know, I'm of the opinion that jail cells, if they're going to be used at all, should be reserved for people who have harmed others or caused property damage or, you know, have really shown themselves to be some kind of a threat. But not getting a new piece of plastic, that just really makes me scratch my head.
I know, but when you think about it, though, it's no more legitimate for them to demand that you have a license from New Hampshire or from anywhere than it is for them to demand that you get a new one. I mean, do they really have, is it right that they could throw you in jail no matter where the license came from? I mean, he's there because it sounds to me like he moved to New Hampshire.
Yes.
And there's a state statute that says within X number of days, like 30 days or 60 days of moving to into the state, establishing a residence there, you have to go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles and get yourself a driver's license in New Hampshire. And that's if he didn't do that, that's probably what got him. I mean, they consider you not having a license at all. They would just convict you of driving without a valid operator's license.
Well, them's the rules, right? And if he agreed to them and he signed on the dotted line, then he consented, didn't he?
I bet he didn't do that.
Well, what do you mean? He didn't sign on any kind of dotted line? When you get your license, don't you have to agree to all the rules of the road?
But you said he never got his license at all.
He did. He had one in Arizona. I'm sorry if I neglected to mention that. Yes, he has a valid license in Arizona, and it's valid. Arizona is one of those weird states where, you know, in each state they have different rules about their licenses. Well, in Arizona, I think it's the longest one that can stay valid. So his is going to be valid for something like till he's 65 years old. And he's in his 30s now, so he wants to hang on to that particular piece of plastic. If he got the one in New Hampshire, he would have to renew it every 4 years or so. So he's saying, look, I already have a valid license. The expiration date hasn't passed. Why do I have to get your plastic? And I think he makes a valid argument. And the reason I think it's heroic is because they're just going to keep putting him in jail. There's no further consequence for a human being violating this rule than to just keep putting him in jail. He could get out, theoretically, Randy, get out of jail, and they could rearrest him because he still hasn't gotten the license. So,
well, he doesn't have to get the license at all. They would have to catch him driving without a license.
Right. And I suppose that's a thing. But he does have a license. It's that he doesn't have their license. And I think that's the issue. I would like to see, eventually, the police say, all right, Daryl, just go on your way. We're not going to arrest you. We're not going to throw you in jail again. Because it's not going to change your behavior.
Well, they're not going to throw him in jail just again. I don't know what the law is in New Hampshire, but if it's anything like it is in Missouri, it escalates with the second, third, fourth offense.
Oh.
In my state, if you get up to third or fourth offense, it's a felony.
Oh, my goodness.
Just for driving without government permission.
You know, I was in jail once upon a time, Randy, and I ran into a lot of people who were there for driving without a valid license. I thought that was pretty remarkable. Like, they were not a danger to anyone. They were, most of them were just driving to work and were pulled over on their way. They didn't have the piece of plastic that the state requires, and into the jail cell they went.
And it didn't matter that they were perfectly sober, that they weren't doing anything dangerous to anyone else. They just simply didn't have the license.
That's right. And for a lot of them, it was a monetary issue. Like, they didn't have the money to go and or the time to go to the DMV. We all know how long it takes to sit in a DMV line, especially here in New Hampshire. There's no, like, deli queue where you can pick a number and then they'll call you up. I mean, you actually have to wait in a physical line. I haven't done that in quite a long time. But I think that was important. Also, I was in jail, I should mention, for victimless crimes. I did things like recording government bureaucrats without permission and throwing a dance party that was alleged to have obstructed government administration. No, never created any victims, never harmed anyone, not even myself. And
don't you suppose that they considered the cop that you videoed to be the victim?
I suppose they do, but they didn't make that argument in court. All they said was that I created a victim of the state, right, by violating the peace and dignity of the state of New Hampshire.
Well, so, even if you kill somebody, the true victim is always the state.
Well, they don't even allege that. I mean, you're right. On paper, that's what it is. It's that I've committed a crime against the state, not a human being. They didn't allege that I had harmed or assaulted any police officers, simply that I had harmed the state somehow.
Well, the state doesn't really like it when they have cases with real victims, because when you have real victims come in and they can be very annoying. They're always bugging the prosecutors because they would like to get their TV back, or they're angry because you shot their father, and they're always making demands on prosecutors. They're really a pain in the behind to the justice system, and they'd rather not have victims in cases at all. The only time that they really need victims is when they need them as witnesses.
What about your experience as a prosecutor, Randy? Did you ever prosecute anyone for a victimless crime?
Well, unfortunately, I did.
Oh, no.
Well, yes. There's no way you can be a prosecutor. And at the time, I did not really... you know, I hadn't figured it all out yet. The most notable thing are the drug crimes.
That's what you remember the most. Somebody,
well, yeah. I mean, most of the people that had driving without a license, they get a fine or something like that. So it wasn't horrible what we were doing to them. But when you get the drug users and dealers, that can get pretty horrible.
We're going to get into that in the next segment. This is Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Freedom Fiends, welcome back. We're going to talk about victimless criminals and how they fill up the prison population. You know, one of them who's in the news is Ross Ulbricht of the Silk Road. There's some news that Free Talk Live was discussing earlier today about how Ross Ulbricht, the alleged operator of the Silk Road black market website, is not going to know who his accusers are. He is not entitled to a witness list, apparently. I'd like to ask you about that, Randy. As a former prosecutor, you might know a thing or two about that. But first, we're talking about Daryl W. Perry's case, where he was driving without a New Hampshire driver's license. He had a valid Arizona license, but the state alleges he is a resident of New Hampshire. And that's, I think, what it comes down to, is that he alleges he is not a resident, that he is only an inhabitant, and that there's some sort of legal distinction. So what do you think, Randy? Does he have a case?
Well, to prove that someone, usually you're a resident of whatever place you claim you're a resident of. And if you lived in Arizona and came to New Hampshire, they would probably, they'd probably give you, you know, some time where there would be some leeway as to whether you were going back. But if there became, there was evidence that you were here to stay, I don't think they would care whether you claimed you were still an Arizona resident. They would consider you legally a New Hampshire resident. And at that point, in all the rules about how soon you had to get a license, driver's license would kick in. And it sounds like he was there longer than that.
Well, the whole issue for me is that I don't see any evidence that the rules and laws of the state of New Hampshire apply to me or to Daryl or to you or to anyone for that matter. I don't see any evidence of that. I see a lot of people claiming that. Like, oh, you're in New Hampshire, so the rules and laws apply to you. Okay, really? Says who? Says what? Where did I sign that I agree to these rules?
Well, that's a fundamental question. Where does the state derive its political authority to do things to you that individuals that make up the state do not have the right to do?
Yeah, that is the question.
It's the bottom line.
And so, you know, there's this other case that's been going on here in Keene, New Hampshire, where I've applied for a concealed carry license. Which is, in New Hampshire, it's a shall issue state, meaning if you apply for if you apply for permission to conceal a firearm on your person, then the state shall issue you one, as long as you're not a felon.
That's all. Isn't that also one of the 101 reasons for moving to New Hampshire?
Sure is.
Yeah, that's a little, you found out that that's not strictly true, didn't you?
I learned that, yes, and it was because of my victimless crimes that the state denied me this supposed right. And, you know, I am fascinated by this because not only did the state deny me my right to self-defense by, you know, saying that it's illegal for me to conceal a firearm, but they've also broken their own rules twice now. There's a limit, according to the law, that they, you know, have to have this trial. If I appeal and say, hey, wait a minute, I do have a right to conceal a firearm, I'm going to take this to court. Well, they have 14 days to schedule that hearing. Well, they didn't do it. They went past the deadline, and now, so finally, they had the trial, or the hearing, as it were. They realized, oh my goodness, we've broken our own rules. Whatever shall we do? We've made this poor boy wait. You know what the solution will be? Let's reconvene here in about a month or so, and let's figure out what the punishments should be. So the punishment was more waiting. So for the crime of waiting too long, they made themselves wait longer. And now the decision is supposed to come down within 14 days. That deadline has also passed. So the same court that broke its own rules about a month ago has broken its own rules again. Do I have any recourse here, Randy?
Well, perhaps if a judge violates the rules of court, someone should report him to the state judge's disciplinary committee.
Oh, I don't want to do that. That sounds like being a snitch.
Yeah, well, you said, how can you punish him? They're the ones that would punish him.
No, I didn't say that. I don't want to punish people. I just want recourse. I want my rights. I don't want to punish people. That's mean. He can face his own consequences. There are, like, natural consequences to bad actions. I don't want to. I don't need to get
involved. There are not natural consequences in a court case where you have a plaintiff and a defendant if the judge messes up.
Yeah, good point. Because, like, he's the referee. Like, there's the prosecutor and me, the defense, and we're the teams who are, you know, making this argument.
Yeah, you're not going to punish one of the teams if the judge messes up.
Yeah,
unless, of course, you could show that the judge actually was on one of those teams.
Yeah.
Do that.
He won't admit it, though. I tried to get him to admit it. Coming up, victimless crime constitutes 86% of the federal prison population. Why is that, and what can we do to change it?
That's pretty stunning, isn't it?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Worms. This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Derek J. Randy England on the other end. Hey, Randy, have you been contacted by the government?
Not today.
Are you safe?
I'm safe and sound, yes.
Good. I am safe. I said worms because that is our warrant canary here on the Freedom Fiends, and I have not been contacted by the government. I am safe. Except I was contacted this week. Some blue lights flashing behind me as I ran a red light. Yep, I did it. I admitted it. And the officer was a little confused. Like, why did you just run this light? Well, there was no one coming. I looked both ways. I decided I'm gonna go. No one was hurt. But this officer thought, all right, I'm gonna let you go with a warning. And he exercised his discretion because my crime had created no victims. And if he had given me a ticket or a citation, some sort of fine, he would be creating a victim, in my opinion.
He would be. And actually, it was more appropriate even in your case. Disregarding a red light can be extremely dangerous. And you can make an argument that certain traffic violations, you know, are creating a threat to other people. But if you stopped, you looked both ways and there was nothing coming and you were sitting there basically feeling like an idiot because why am I sitting here when there's nothing coming? You said, I'm just going to go, right?
I don't let the state tell me when to stop or go. I let my head tell me.
Well, yeah, but the problem with the traffic light is that if you disregard them completely, the state has set up a system that tells people coming from the other directions that they can just fly on through and they don't even have to look. So they've set up a dangerous situation that you don't really dare disregard.
That's right.
For your own safety and for the other people on the road, which, of course, you don't want to endanger them. But in your case, that wouldn't apply at all. Maybe the cop bought it, right?
I think he did. I think he was like, hey, look. It could be dangerous. Running a red light, I'm not advocating this. I'm not saying like, hey, everyone, go out and run red lights. That would be horrible and dangerous and cause a lot of problems. But I'm saying I did it this one time. I didn't cause any victims. And I think the cop did the right thing by exercising discretion and saying, look, no one was hurt here. You go on your way. I'm going to look for some real criminals. But apparently, there are other cops who don't exercise their discretion in these cases, and as a result, victimless crime constitutes 86% of the federal prison population. Tell me more about that, Randy England.
Well, that's an article that's in the Libertarian News this fall. It's not a new one, but that jives perfectly with my experience in federal court, because I've always got multiple federal defendants, you know, that I'm defending, you know, just about all the time. And my experience there is that half the people or more in the federal courts are in there on drug offenses.
Wow.
Pure, just drug offenses. Half of everybody in there. It's huge.
Is this where drug offenses, like they're feeding drugs to other people? They're drugging people or what?
Yeah, you would think so. No, they can be, people that possess drugs, but the majority of them are people that sell drugs.
They have drugs in their pockets or they exchange drugs for money.
Well, more often they're selling drugs.
They're pharmacists?
Sort of. Unlicensed.
Oh, they're unlicensed. And they're not selling prescription drugs. They're
selling
illegal
drugs. Well, mostly what they're doing, they're not doing something that is that what you call a gray market, maybe, where you're doing something that's legal if you have government permission, but not if you don't?
A gray market is not to be confused with the black market, is the trade of a commodity through distribution channels which, while legal, are unofficial, unauthorized, or unintended by the original manufacturer.
Well, selling morphine is perfectly legal if it's done through legal channels. In other words, through a licensed pharmacy prescribed by a doctor and given by a licensed pharmacist. And if you follow, you know, all of those permissions, they're allowed to sell it to you and you're allowed to take it. So a drug dealer who is selling morphine, you know, arguably would be in sort of a gray market thing, right?
I suppose so.
Of course, they wouldn't be treated that way. They're just a drug dealer, you know.
Yeah, and how does the state look upon these drug dealers? What sort of sentences do they hand down? Is it uniform? Like, does everyone sort of get the same sentence, or does it vary depending on the drug?
It varies. Each drug has a different schedule, so that if you have so much marijuana, so many pounds of marijuana, you're at a certain level of punishment, usually measured in months, like 120 months, which is 10 years, say. That might be so many pounds or tons or whatever of marijuana. But if it was cocaine, it would be a much smaller amount that would get you to that level. And if it was crack cocaine, it would be an even much, much smaller amount, which would get you to that level.
And that is so heavy. Just thinking about the months of 120 months. Can you imagine being a person who may have possessed one of these substances or had the wrong piece of vegetation in your pocket, and then hearing from a robed authority that you might be spending 120 months in jail? That doesn't sound right.
You'll be hearing from them that you will be spending 120 months in jail.
And then the gavel falls. So what other kinds of victimless criminals have you protected against?
Well, the most, besides drugs, some that I've had are the most weapons charges, and these are exactly the same as the drug ones, and that is you're possessing a weapon or a kind of a weapon without government permission. So say you had the...
Oh, that's like me.
Well, if you... No, that's usually like what it's I would a do. Felony. Yeah, if you had a felony bad check charge, okay?
Yeah.
You cannot ever own a firearm.
Oh.
And if you wrote a bad check once and that was high enough to be a felony, you're considered too dangerous ever to own a weapon, even just to protect your family or go hunting or something. It's pretty ridiculous.
Forever. No matter what.
Forever.
No matter what changes in your life.
Well, no. If you could actually get the conviction reversed or expunged, it was gone, that would change it. But that doesn't happen often.
So this does happen all the time. In fact, one of my neighbors from part of Philadelphia that I lived in is in jail now for the possession of a firearm, which he's not allowed to have. The state didn't give him permission. And so he's sitting in a jail cell because he had a hunk of metal sitting there. It's not that he used it in the commission of a crime. It's just that he had the metal and that it was in the shape of a gun and it could be used like a gun. And
now,
I think that's crazy.
If you used it or you used it to shoot at somebody or even used it to commit a crime, then that's not a victimless crime. I'm just talking we're talking about possession without permission.
That's right.
That's it. And if you take the drugs and you take the firearms charges, and this article that we had, it said, let's see, drugs, 51% were in for drug charges. That fits. That's perfect. Fits with my experience. And then 35% are what they call public order crimes.
What is so that?
Well, that's possession a firearm without permission from the government, and it's also driving without a license, and everything that the government tells you, it's every victimless crime other than drugs, really. When they say public order, they're talking about all of the rules and regulations that people have to follow, even though they're not hurting anybody else.
And public order is really a misnomer. I would say it is public disorder, because they have to point guns at people and put handcuffs on them, throw them in cages in order to achieve this so-called order. And I don't think that's how it's really
well,
going.
Well, and actually, this article is the ones that characterize them as public order crimes. And of course, these people, if they had actually caused public disorder, you know, the defendant, you know, it's possible that you could end up having a crime or something. But these are not even things like that. Oh, immigration laws fall under this. I've had defendants that violate the game laws by
game catching, laws like gamblers.
No. Game, you know, bang, bang, fish hunt.
Okay.
And if caught fish that they weren't allowed to catch, and, you know, that can be a federal crime.
And gamblers are in jail, too. And I think that's a victimless crime, right?
Same thing. Yeah. I have never seen I'm sure there are federal gambling laws, but I've never had to deal with that. But I have dealt with the game violations, the weapons charges, and heavens, drugs, lots of drugs. And
you think that's the big moneymaker for the state? They focus on that one the most?
Well, yeah, because drugs are a real, how is it? That it's kind of like...
Well, drugs are a business. That's why. I mean, they can squeeze money out of these people. It's not like you can make a business out of people possessing firearms, right? So,
well, that's true. With drugs, there's lots of civil forfeitures in that. You get to steal people's money. You get to steal their houses. You get to steal their vehicles.
Yeah.
And then you get to feed all of these people into the prison systems, which are mostly private prisons that are run by, you know, people that are obviously very closely tied with the federal government, and everybody's palm, you know, gets greased and everybody goes home happy except the guys in the prison, I guess.
So why does this continue, Randy? Because it would seem to me that if people were presented with this evidence, with these facts, that they would say, well, this is abhorrent. I don't support this. It must stop.
Most people apparently do support it, that if a person is a felon, that they should never allowed to own a gun, and that if you sell drugs, you'd belong to be in prison.
Hey, wait a minute.
A lot of people would give you the death penalty on, you know,
I don't think that's true. No, I do not think that's true. I don't think that just because the government does something to punish people means that the population supports it. How often is it that, you know, populations will say, oh, the French hate freedom, or they'll hate on another people from another country, but what they really hate is the government from the other country. It's not the people. And in same way, the people here in the U.S., they love freedom. We support freedom. It's the government who's cracking down on freedom.
You've been in New Hampshire too long, Derek. All you got to do is get a drug dealer in front of a jury, and he's hung.
Really? That is a shame, because here in New Hampshire, there was a man who was growing 15 plants of marijuana, admitted to it in court, and was found not guilty unanimously by a New Hampshire jury.
I'm glad for you.
That's because people here believe in freedom. I think we can turn it around, Randy, because of people like Daryl W. Perry who are willing to challenge the system. Peacefully, of course.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Meow. Meow, 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 meow. Freedom Fiends. Yeah. Worms. We're talking about victimless crimes here and how 86% of people in federal prison are guilty of committing a crime that involved zero victims. Didn't cause any damage to property or people. Just the state saying, you hurt our feelings by breaking our rules. Who says those rules apply to you or me or anyone else? Well, they just allege it with no evidence. But that won't stop them. But what will stop them? I propose, Randy England, former prosecutor, that Daryl W. Perry has the right answer. He is openly challenging the state by disobeying their rules, not following their suggestions, their words on paper, and taking the consequences and being peaceful the whole time. What can they do but put him in a cage and then eventually give up? I mean, you say they're going to take away more of his rights, so put him in a cage for longer times. But if everyone started doing this, if everyone just said, you know, I don't want to get that new piece of plastic. I really don't want to go to the DMV and fill out your forms and pay your $100 or whatever it is each year to get this new license plate or registration. I'm just not going to do it. what would happen?
Well, if everyone was willing to get caught and go to jail for it, there'd be a simpler solution. They'd just change the law.
People didn't have to do that one? Or
well, yeah, what? You know, I mean, we commonly say, well, if everybody would just do this, then, you know, would refuse to obey it. That's right. That would completely destroy the law. But how do we get there? And if you got anywhere near to there, the law would be changed anyway.
So I think that's why this is so interesting to follow, because it's not one of those cases where everyone has to do it. Because I'm with you. If you're counting on everyone to do the same thing, it's never going to happen. But I think Daryl's onto something in that just one man standing up to this bad law could affect it for everyone.
I don't know. I think that they can take one guy and...
You think they'll just run him through the mud?
They'll just keep running him through it, and then they'll kick it up to a felony at some point, and then he can be a persistent felon, and who knows?
Yeah.
You know, they can accelerate the things even more. They have enhanced felonies if you've been into prison before, and then they have rules if you've been to prison once or twice or three times that they keep you for a longer period of time. I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse. They can wear you down.
But wouldn't it be so interesting if it were all over just a piece of plastic? I don't think anyone's ever done that. I mean, that's all it literally is. It's like, you don't have our piece of plastic. You have their piece of plastic, Arizona's. We want you to have New Hampshire's plastic, and you won't do it. You will do it, or we will keep putting you in jail, and we'll take away your rights. We'll take away your ability to own a gun and to vote. And then you'll see why you need us.
And probably he can drive legally in every state except New Hampshire.
I would bet that's true. Yeah, it's a valid license in Arizona.
Well, I assume it is. I mean, it's possible that Arizona could have something in their statute that says if you establish residence somewhere else, your license is no longer valid. But I don't know that.
But what does it even mean to be a resident? It's baloney. Anyway, any more on this victimless crime stuff? Any? Fun memories of victories for victimless criminals who you've
I had one time when I was a brand new prosecutor, I was handed a case and told that I had to try it, and it was some guy who had a raccoon, a wild raccoon that he was caught possessing, and you're not allowed to possess a raccoon in the state of Missouri.
Well, how was he possessing it? Was he holding it in his arms, or did it just always come around his house? Because raccoons will just get into your garbage.
No, it was, he'd tamed it, and it lived in the house like a cat.
Oh.
And he had this raccoon, and I was given the case and said, here, you need to try this case. And, wow. I'll tell you when we get back.
No, don't leave me hanging. I need to know if you got free.
Oh, I couldn't. Oh, well, the story
all
ends
right.
up with me having egg on my face.
Uh-oh, it didn't That's work okay. out for you. Well, when we come back, the Silk Road judge won't reveal the witnesses against Ross Ulbricht because she alleges he could have them killed. We've got that story. Plus more on what legislators in New Hampshire are doing to reverse the trend of victimless crimes and incarceration in New Hampshire. All that and more when Freedom Fiends returns from this trip to the free market. Worms. Reverse the effects of a heroin overdose. Why, then, is a legislature in New Hampshire trying to make it easier for people to get these things? We'll talk about that. But first, Randy, you were telling us about a story where you ended up with a bit of egg on your face for defending a man who wanted a bearcat? What did he want? A raccoon?
Oh, I was not defending him. I think this was... it was probably my first case, first trial as a brand new prosecutor. This was more than 20 years ago.
Oh, no, you weren't defending this victim's criminal. You were trying to put him away.
I was the prosecutor. This fella, he'd been caught possessing an illegal raccoon, a crime in the state of Missouri with a punishment up to 1 year in the county jail.
Oh, my goodness. Were you looking for that? Was that what you were going to offer or ask for from the judge?
No, I wasn't. But the boss, I was brand new in the office, and he handed me the file. And it was one of those cases where he could care less what happened to it. So I said, here, take it. You know, you're harmless. You know, there's no way you can screw it up. If you lose it, I don't care. But so this is your case.
Who's the boss when you're a new prosecutor? I'm not talking about his name. I'm talking about, like, what position is he?
The elected county prosecutor.
Okay.
And I was an assistant prosecuting attorney that worked for the elected prosecutor. And the boss said, hey, it needs to be tried. We could practice for me. So I read all the reports, and I met with the conservation agent that was really interested in prosecuting this case. He wanted this fellow made an example of for other people who might think of having one. And the defendant, he came to court. He absolutely said, I want my trial. I'm going to fight this.
Nice.
And we went to court. I brought in my conservation agent, laid out the whole case, and the agent did a good job with it. The evidence was solid. I mean, rock solid. I mean, I proved beyond any doubt that this guy had definitely deliberately possessed an illegal raccoon, and he'd been caught red-handed with it. And then after I got the end of my case, and the defendant takes the stand.
Wait a minute. You didn't get to intent. Did he have intent to commit a crime? Maybe he didn't know it was illegal. Don't you have to have intent as well?
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Oh, I suppose you're right.
But he definitely intended to possess this raccoon.
Okay.
And when he took the stand, he gets up there, and he just makes his whole thing. He makes it, nails down all of the corners on his conviction. He explained that he and his family, his kids, they discovered this weakened, starving baby raccoon alone in the garbage can on one cold winter night.
And
he took
boy.
It in. And they fed it, and they raised it, and the kids turned it into a family pet.
Oh, and, no. Did this melt your heart? Was there a jury?
No, there wasn't a jury, just a judge.
Thank
and
goodness.
And then when the summer came, the animal, they pressed the thing into service as a mascot for the defendant's softball team. And his wife sewed a little uniform, ball uniform with a little bitty cap that the raccoon wore to the games. And
oh my gosh, that's so cute.
And it came to the attention, of course, the conservation agents who came down on him. And when the defendant finished his it wasn't a defense, it was a complete confession. I asked that the judge find him guilty, and the judge hit the gavel and said, I find you guilty. And before the judge would even ask me what recommendation I wanted, you know, for punishment, she said, and I sentence you to a $5 fine.
Oh, wasn't that nice?
Yeah, the judge was a nice lady.
Couldn't the judge have sentenced this defendant to a $0 fine? I mean, why $5? Seems pretty petty.
Well, if she had...
I guess it's an accounting trick, right? They need something.
It had to either be a dollar amount, or it had to be... You could even put somebody on probation, but actually most people would rather get a small fine than being placed on probation.
Now, question, can you serve your fine with jail time? In most places you can, where it's I don't have the money.
No, there's not a solid way for that. If you wanted that and said, Judge, I'm not paying it, so just sentence me to jail, I mean, you could get that.
Because that's exactly, you know, I brought up Darryl W. Perry in the first hour, and he's a radio personality who produces news content. He's currently in jail, and it's not because the judge sentenced him to jail, but because he wouldn't pay the fine. So he was sentenced to a fine, but wouldn't pay it, so then jail was offered as an alternative. So it's really strange that, you know, the state views that as value. Like, you get $50 of value towards the state sentence per day you spend in jail here in Keene. And it might be different around different parts of the country. But I find that fascinating that the state
they don't
values...
have a set. They don't have a set number like that. In the, it's not like 50 days or $50. It doesn't go that way.
Yeah, that is
it
really.
It doesn't go the way here. Some places, I'm sure it can and does, as you pointed out. But that was my story. And I was, I wasn't proud of it. I just felt like, I deserved, the chastising that it was.
Were you embarrassed during the trial?
No, I wasn't. I was kind of an idiot, going along with it. When you're a brand new prosecutor, you think about other things.
Am I dressed right?
I just have to get through this thing. I'm going to embarrass myself. Will the defense attorney, make a fool out of me and things like that? It's only later on that things start coming into your mind, and after a few years go by, you stop gloating over the victories, and you realize that, even in a murder case, and the case is over, and you go, the very last case that I tried as a prosecutor was a murder case, and I got my conviction, and the guy was sentenced, to life in prison. And when it was done, I just walked out. I mean, there was a time where I'd have just been dancing a jig in the hallway. And when I walked out, it was just kind of sad. I mean, I felt like, okay, well, one person's dead and another one's going to spend the rest of their life in prison. What's to
Yay.
Be happy about here?
Yeah, that's not really that's not making the world a better place, it seems to me. Like, I would like to see more focus on peace and reconciliation. Like, maybe the victim, of course, he's dead now, but there are other victims, his surviving family members and friends coworkers. Couldn't they be made whole, perhaps?
Well, that may be. I mean, I didn't feel at all ashamed about what I'd done. It had to be done, And in any society, this mad dog killer had to come off the street, I mean, he either had to come off the street because I was going to take him off, or the victim's dad was going to find him and blow his head off. I mean,
speaking of, there is an interesting story in the news that just broke today about a man behind bars who's facing life, who's not aware of his accusers. Now, this is pretty unusual, right? As a prosecutor, have you ever encountered a case like that?
Well, it's in federal court, right?
It is.
Yeah, they play a game in federal court, and here's what it is. The rules are you're not entitled to know the evidence against you or the witnesses against you until the last minute before trial.
Yeah, that's what it is. He gets
when I say last minute, I mean that's the last week or two, but I'm saying in terms of the time it takes to prepare for a trial, the rules are that you don't have anywhere near the amount of time that you need to prepare for a trial. And, I mean, you need months on a really serious case to run all the evidence down. And what they do in federal court, or most federal courts, the ones that I deal with, is that as soon as you get the initial arraignments out of the way, the prosecutor will announce that we're going to do early discovery, make everything available to the defendant and his attorney, and we'll get that all out of the way early so there won't be these surprises. And that's the way it normally operates, because everybody knows that it's an utterly unfair system if they don't do that. And you can't get a fair trial if you don't get this stuff months in advance. But when they want to be jerks, or they want to make demands on you, they'll come and say, hey, we don't owe you any of this stuff until right up at close to trial. And so you're not getting it. Or if you don't do exactly what we say, you're not getting it. And that's apparently what they have done to Ross Ulbricht in his case, the Silk Road case, right?
That's right. It's very tricky because he's being charged with several crimes, so they're all felonies regarding drug trafficking. But then there's these other troubling charges of murder for hire, which were really strange because they didn't fit this guy's personality. There was no evidence that came forward about these things. It was just allegations by government agents. And it's like, yeah, how much can we really trust these guys? So I'm skeptical of what evidence they have to produce. I think it's unfair of them to withhold this information from him before trial. I mean, how can a person adequately prepare to defend themselves? And they're acting like this guy is John Gotti behind bars going to operate the mafia. I mean, he's got limited access to the outside world. It's not like he can email or use a cell phone. He's not in some Mexican prison. This is like a federal jail, right? So it's crazy to me that the state would allege that he could commit some sort of crimes from jail, that he's going to have his witnesses killed. I mean, if he had that power, wouldn't he have done that already?
Well, yeah, there were the early, originally they made allegations. When I say allegations, I mean just bald accusations that he had been involved in trying to do a murder for hire thing. But apparently they haven't released any evidence of it, and there's no charges, right? They've not charged him with that at all.
I don't believe that they can sufficiently charge him, but there are accusations of murder.
Well,
for hire.
Accusations are nothing. Accusations are cheap. If you have proof that somebody was involved in a murder for hire, then you bring criminal charges. You don't just drag this stuff out and, you know, cause a, you know, libeling someone's name just because you want to inflame the judge and get them to withhold the evidence so they can make sure that they get a conviction because he can't prepare for trial.
You know, I think that's exactly what it is. There's a blog post at freeross.org that reads, "This is an uncharged crime, which conveniently requires no proof, but goes a long way to prejudice a jury and the public." Basically, the prosecution wants to smear Ross's reputation without having to prove anything. We'll be back with more victimless crimes and things that are going right in New Hampshire.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Worms. Worms, 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 silkworms, silkworms on the Silk Road. We're talking about Ross Ulbricht, and he's the man who is currently sitting in a federal jail cell awaiting what will probably be the least fair trial I've ever heard about, because he's not even getting his witness list until the Friday before a Monday trial. And Randy England, you're a former prosecutor. Is that normal?
It's not only not normal, it's impossible. If that's the judge's order as it still stands, this article is 12-12. That's a new article.
3 days ago.
It may be too late now to give out that witness list and have time to prepare for trial. But to receive that on a Friday before a Monday, it's just a joke. I mean, everybody, you know, on the prosecution side, they must be high-fiving over there. But there's so many ways that they, even if they believe these accusations that he would be a threat to these witnesses, they could limit the information. They could even come say, well, look, we'll release them to your lawyers. And if your lawyers want to release them to you, then you're going to go completely uncommunicating, you know, with the outside world. I mean, we're gonna put you in a box. I mean, I'm not saying they should do these things. I don't believe any of it, but there are things that they could do, all of which would be preferable than him not getting a fair trial. And that's exactly what this will cause.
Yeah, this seems like a miscarriage of justice.
It does. It does completely. I mean, I don't know how a judge could say, oh, we're going to give this out on the Friday before the Monday and say it with a straight face. I mean, even if it's in compliance with the law, it's not compliant with any sense of decency or a fair trial. And if the government, you know, wants to go ahead with the trial and have it to be fair, they're going to have to give this out sooner and find another way to protect their witnesses. And of course, they could always actually protect their witnesses if it was so important. I mean, if they thought this was such a threat, and still let him get his fair trial. But I'm not reading anything about that in here, so I don't know.
Well, this is why it seems to me
it
like...
It seems crazy.
Well, the judge and the prosecutor are obviously on the same team. If you were a referee and you were supposed to watch a football game, or you were supposed to preside over a baseball game, don't you kind of want both sides to be, like, even? Like, you don't want it to be a blowout. I'd like to see some action. I'd like to see some evidence on both sides, some arguments, some surprises here, maybe steal some bases, or, you know, I want to see some action. And when the judge is like, no, you don't get any access to the outside world, you're not going to know who your witnesses are who are accusing you or testifying against you until the very last minute. I mean, it's almost like the judge is working for the state.
You mean it's like if you had a football game and the referees were all being paid by one of the team's owners?
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
So the players were being paid by the exact same entity that's paying the referee.
Yeah, it's almost like that. It's
no, it's not almost
exactly
like that.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah. Yes.
But things are changing. Things are changing. You know, there may not... I believe there is hope, and I'm just ridiculously optimistic for Ross Ulbricht, who I've supported at freeross.org. I threw him a party. He wasn't, of course, able to make it because he's in jail, but we did raise some money for him through that venture, and I sent it his way. So I'm excited. I want him to win, but I want him to have a chance, and it just seems like the judge is not really playing fair. I mean, after a federal trial, is there any next step? I mean, I'm used to appealing, but I'm in the low-level court
here.
Oh,
yeah, there's a federal... There's a federal appeal, and the monstrously large majority of federal appeals are the cases, the convictions are affirmed by the Court of Appeals.
Okay, so this could go higher, and he could get another chance, perhaps?
No, don't put any hope in the Court of Appeals.
Okay, you just dash those hopes.
Now, I guess if they cut you too short, you know, the Court of Appeals could say, you know, I mean, I would hope that they would say that getting the list of witnesses on a Friday for a Monday trial, you know, is not only a violation of due process, it's just a crazy joke. I mean, it's insane. But I don't have enough faith that that would happen, that I'd put much hope in it. I think his lawyers better go into that trial on the... Every defense attorney that has any sense knows if they're going into the trial that they better win it at the trial, because there's little or no hope on appeal.
Well, I've got more questions about how we can help Ross Ulbricht, if there's any hope for him, and what we can learn from this if we find ourselves in a similar position. Plus, still have yet to talk about the bill that can reverse overdoses. How?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Real. Worms, 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 worms. Row.
Yeah. All right, worms, this is Freedom Fiends. Welcome back. And we're talking about Ross Ulbricht. He is the man alleged to have operated the Silk Road Black Market website. And even though the prosecutors are trying to throw in this non-charge accusation of murder for hire to slander this guy, what it's really about is drugs. This website made it possible for individuals to trade money for drugs safely, quickly, efficiently.
Anonymously,
and that's why they preferred it. Saved them their drive-by shooting in their back alley where they were formerly going to get what could have been a very safe drug. Could have been safer than alcohol. Not everything on the Silk Road was even illegal. But this website provided a safer alternative for people engaged in the black market. And that's what it's really about. And the prosecutors don't want that issue to be brought up. I think that's why they're really slandering this guy and bringing up this murder for hire business. But things are a little bit different in New Hampshire, where a friend of mine who recently won an election for state representative just introduced a bill that would expand availability of a drug that reverses overdoses, specifically heroin overdoses, where in New Hampshire, they're reaching epidemic levels. So the drug is called Narcan, and some have called it a wonder drug because it quickly reverses the effects of a heroin overdose. It's a lifesaver, and even the paramedics with American Medical Response admit that, and they're... This bill would make it possible with a prescription for the average Joe to acquire one of these pens. And essentially, from my limited understanding, is it's a pen that has some chemicals in it. You shove it up the person's nose who's having the overdose. It's like a spray, like an Afrin-type spray, and it reverses the overdose. Now, I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor. And I think that it's best that I not use one of these things or acquire them without knowledge. I think that's really the issue, is that doctors are saying people can't grab these pens. They won't know how to use them. They'll put themselves in danger, but they could save a life. And so what do you think about this bill, Randy England? Is this going to save lives? Is this in the interest of the people? Is this for freedom?
Well, how would they hurt themselves? Is it poisonous to just you or me?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. What if it were? I mean, I don't think it is, but let's imagine it were poisonous. Is it still something that you think should be available to the public?
It'd probably still be. Everybody has some kind of poison or another underneath their sink, so that's probably not a reason. We ought to have it. Do you know what the reason is why the legislatures don't want this?
Well, they say, according to some of the administrators of the drug, who say that if people aren't properly trained, well, the heroin user generally will withdraw from the drug and can be potentially violent and needs airway management. And those are things that the layperson just can't administer.
Oh, and they would rather have him just be dead so those issues didn't come up.
Well, I suppose so.
Isn't that the option that we're talking about? Like, you can't save his life because if he woke up, he might be violent?
Yeah, that's their argument. I think it's pretty weak.
There's nothing else there. Yeah, I think what this is just kind of a sin penalty that, you know, hey, it's their own fault, you know, for taking drugs and, you know, let them lie in it. You know, same thing back in alcohol prohibition, you know, back in the 20s when the United States mandated that alcohol have poison put in it.
Whoa!
So people couldn't drink it, and the bootleggers, you know, were more or less successful in trying to get the poisons out of it, but they just kept selling the stuff anyway. And they say 10,000 people died from the alcohol that the government forced to be put. I mean, the poisons like methyl alcohol that they forced to be put into alcohol. And they didn't care, and nobody cared, because after all, these were people who were drinking, and that's like drinking without government permission. And you know, it's the same. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, there's people who would argue that people with venereal diseases shouldn't get antibiotics because it just encourages them, you know?
Well, I think alcohol is a hard drug, and people should respect it and not abuse it. And there's nothing good about heroin, as far as I'm concerned. This is a horrible, horrible drug that's making a lot of problems in the world. And I think it's important that this lawmaker, this friend of mine, Amanda Bolden from New Hampshire, she said the bill isn't a solution to the heroin problem, but it may save lives and give addicts a chance to seek treatment. I mean, could you imagine you hit rock bottom? Often that's what addicts need before they wake up and they say, I've got to make a change in my life.
And getting a fatal dose could be the rock bottom you needed if you survived it.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought as well. It says here from the article at WMUR.com that Narcan can be administered several different ways, including intranasally. So I was right. You can shove it up someone's nose and save their life.
I'm just thinking their legislators in that just don't have any sympathies, and they don't care about some dirty druggie dying.
Well, I don't know. Is it possible that they... I don't even know if they banned it in the first place or it was just preemptively banned. Like, oh, you know, new drug out. It doesn't just go on the market, right? Those are regulated by the states. There's all kinds of great new laws and repeals of laws, thanks to the people who have moved to New Hampshire for more freedom.
Yeah, but this is the most unsympathetic. I mean, you've got all kinds of drugs. If you got some drug that's going to save you from a heart attack, at least you got some sympathy on your side. Poor guy would have died. Give him this drug. Well, okay at FDA. But here you got, oh, you could save some drug addict's life. And they're going, yeah, we'll put that on the front burner.
Well, I like that.
There's no sympathy there.
What do you mean? Why is there no sympathy? They could pass this bill.
For the vast majority of the people out there who are in favor of prohibition.
You're right. Yeah, I guess I forgot about that. But
all over.
But these politicians, they're going to want to get behind this. This is one of those things I see as a victory. Like, when I moved to New Hampshire for more freedom as part of the Free State Project, I thought that civil disobedience was going to be the solution. People like Daryl W. Perry just openly violating the laws and saying, I won't comply with bad laws. And I thought that was really going to change things. But then I see this strategy of working within the state, getting elected to the state house, proposing a bill, doing it the traditional way and getting support from local legislators who say, yeah, I want to support that. I want to be behind saving lives. I mean, this bill passes and freedom has increased in New Hampshire. True?
True, absolutely. No, just out of common decency, this should be made available. I mean, just a humanity thing. It ought to be available, and the fact that you know you disapprove of what the beneficiaries of this would get out of it. I mean, that's not a reason. This is something that just should be out there, just right away. As soon as it was available, you'd want it out there. I mean, if I had a kid who was a heroin addict, I mean, I'd just be beating down the doors to get a hold of this if I was around him any time where I might be able to help or friends.
I agree. I would want to keep a few extras laying around. I wouldn't want to have them in the house. I mean, who cares if they go bad? You never end up using them. Big deal. I mean, better safe than sorry. It's good to have a fire extinguisher, and if you don't use it, no big deal. You know, I don't plan to have any fires, but I keep one anyway.
That's right. And they need to be recharged from time to time.
That's right. And so there have been other successes, and this really blows my mind. It's a tough pill to swallow, Randy, honestly, because, you know, I'm so gung-ho for following my conscience and ignoring the law, but this is not a good strategy in New Hampshire as far as I've seen. Like, there's been successes in the state house with regard to knife freedoms as well. Like, I come from New Jersey, which is a place where, oh, there's all kinds of rules about what kind of blade you can have and how long it can be and where you can have it. But in New Hampshire, you can carry any size blade you want, as many as you want, wherever you want, and no questions asked. And that's really cool, because I don't have to have fear that just because I'm carrying a tool in my pocket, I'm going to be subjected to arrest or detainment or questioning by police officers. So I happen to carry a knife now. Do you carry a knife, Randy?
No, I carry a revolver.
All right. That'll get the job done, depending. But I just like it. You know, if you need to open letters or open a package, a knife is a very handy tool. I used to feel like a caveman without one.
Well, a revolver is of no use in opening an envelope. If you want to read what's in.
Depending. Yeah, I suppose so. But isn't that something to celebrate, that legislatures can get elected in a place like this, and even libertarians, even anarchists getting elected to the state house and repealing bad laws?
No, I'm good with that. I know, you know, people have varying opinions about whether voting does any good or not. And most of the time, it probably doesn't, in the sense that, you know, if the first time you ever affect an election with your vote, will, you know, it hasn't happened yet. No, but no, there's hardly been anybody that's ever affected one. But on the other hand, if they had on the ballot an initiative that said, shall the federal government be dissolved immediately and nothing take its place, I mean, I'd go and say, vote yes, you know, right?
Yeah, I could do that. I'd be for that. There's one other cool thing that happened in New Hampshire as a result of these free stater legislators, I would claim, and that's the New Hampshire Libertarian Beer Renaissance that was just written about at Vice.com. Did you hear about this, where there's a microbrewery renaissance thanks to a new law that allows microbrews to exist without all this intrusive paperwork and filing fees from the government?
Isn't this in a state where the state sells the liquor? Is the New Hampshire one of those places?
Yeah, but I don't think they have a monopoly. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think that the state... I think you're allowed to compete with the state liquor commission or whoever they are. I'm banned from all New Hampshire liquor stores, by the way. So I won't be able to pick up any. I'm going to have to go to these microbreweries. That's okay. I didn't steal anything. It happened because I sang. Don't sing in liquor stores. You could be banned. We'll be back.
In public liquor stores?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Yeah. Worms, worms, worms. This is the Freedom Fiends. Welcome to Redemption in the Third Act. Yes, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain this evening, you insomniacs who are listening live. Well, I've got some happy news. Even though we've been talking about drugs and prosecutors, possible life sentences, there is some happy news that comes out of New Hampshire, where there's a libertarian beer renaissance happening. Benjamin Franklin said, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. I agree with that sentiment. And now, thanks to some legislators in New Hampshire reducing or relaxing the laws, competition has arisen. And microbreweries, which are even smaller than nanobreweries, have begun to operate. I'm not exactly sure exactly what their distinction. I think it's 2,000 barrels a year or less. But regardless, they're beer that you can make in your home, you can now sell in New Hampshire if you wanted to. And I think that's cool. And it's causing lots of people to want to do that. What do you think, Randy? Would you start doing it if you were allowed?
Well, in the state of Missouri, everyone is allowed to brew their own beer.
But can you sell it?
But there are some rules when you get to selling it, of course. And apparently, I was looking at the article that you pointed out to me earlier. The fellow that the article is about has gotten some really liberal rules that allow people. You don't have to jump through many hoops if you don't do a whole lot of business.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a thing like to get a license to brew beer. It didn't matter if you were Anheuser-Busch and doing a trillion barrels versus some little guy who was doing 1,000 barrels. It was still, you know, $1,000 or more for a license to do it, and which works out to, you know, a tenth of a penny a beer for Anheuser-Busch and a dollar a beer for you, you know, depending on how much you were doing.
It's just not fair. It might seem fair on paper, but it's preferential treatment to the big guys, the Anheuser-Busch folks.
And one of the laws, I think it said in here also that one of the laws had been that I think it was, again, maybe somebody, was it Bush or not, got the law set up so that you could have the micro breweries, but they couldn't sell. Anheuser-Busch, it said, got a small change made to the bill. This bill for it got out of committee that limited sales over the counter to 4 ounces.
Yeah, what a joke.
Now, if you can't sell a pint, I mean, why go in, right?
Or do you have to order like four-ounce glasses? Are you going to just get samples of all your different beers here? Yeah. I mean,
but apparently that's changed now, right?
It has. Yep. Thanks to these New Hampshire legislatures, most of whom I think are free staters, the people who have moved to New Hampshire for more freedom and then decided to run for politics, they actually got elected. Where else does that happen? I mean, I never heard of a libertarian or an anarchist being elected in New Jersey or Philadelphia, both the places I lived, or even D.C. I lived there as well. Have you ever heard of a libertarian or an anarchist being elected where you lived?
Not really. And New Hampshire, I mean, they were picked to be the Free State Project because it was so open.
Yeah, it was friendly.
The legislature, right?
Yeah, not only that, the politics here just tends to be libertarian. I think that most of the people, while they might not wear the label libertarian, I think they want government hands off and they want their independence and pro Second Amendment, pro economic freedom, pro civil liberties. That's what people up here tend to be about. And that gives me a lot of hope for the future. Even though there are some people suffering federally for victimless crimes, I think things are going in the right direction because of people who use peaceful noncompliance and the other half, the people who use the system to peacefully, slowly dismantle it and repeal these bad laws.
Well, you've done some really great things in New Hampshire. I'm kind of jealous of that. I hope to see more, though.
Oh, there's a lot to follow here, and the story will continue. I think we're just at the beginning of the amazing new adventure called living free in this glorious green globe.
But we're at the end of the Freedom Fiends.
That's right. That'll have to do it for tonight. Hey, it's been great being with you, Randy. Good show.
Hey, same here, Derek. Good night.
Yeah, let's do this again.
We will.
Worms. I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain, and I hope that you get a little piece of freedom tonight in your dreams and in reality. Take steps to increase independence in your life. All right, that does it. Worms.
Yeah.
Yeah.